All right, so here we go. Romans chapter 7. Or do you not know, brothers, for I am speaking to those who know the law. Now, here's my suggestion on this. For I am now speaking directly to those who know the law. Whereas previously in chapter 6, he was speaking of and to Gentile believers. I believe this is the signal, his textual signal, that he is turning his argument towards those who know the law, quote unquote. By those who know the law, who are those who know the law? Certainly not the God-fearing Gentile believers. That's not the way that we would, that Paul, the Pharisee, would speak and would describe Gentile God-fearing believers. That's why I'm suggesting Romans 7 turns to address Jewish people and proselytes. So he says, or do you not know, brothers, for I am now speaking directly to those who know the law, that is Jews and proselytes, that the law, now what law? Remember, nomos, there's ambiguity here in the way he's using it, and it's intentional ambiguity. He's intentionally messing with you. That's the thing you need to understand. Paul, he's done this before in Romans 7. Remember that whole diatribe where he was messing with us from the very beginning? He's messing with you again. Or at least he's messing with the Jewish readership. He says to those who know the law, that the law of marriage, halakhically speaking means legally speaking, so Jewish law regarding marriage is binding on a person only as long as he lives. So this is different. It's already a little different. For example, a married woman is bound by law to remain married to her husband while he lives. But if her husband dies, she is released from the law of marriage. See, there he says, there he identifies what the law is that he's speaking of. The law of marriage. And considered unmarried then. Accordingly, she will be called an adulteress if she lives with another man while her husband is alive. But if her husband dies, she's free from that law regarding marriage, the law of marriage. And if she marries another man after his death, she's not an adulteress. Likewise, my Jewish brothers, you also have died according to the law regarding your marriage to the flesh. And here's the big reveal. First husband is not the law. It can't be, because the law is the obligation to the first husband. Okay? You can't have it both. It cannot be both. It'd be like being married to your wedding band, you know? Without a husband or a wife behind it. So the big reveal is this. Who's the first husband? The first husband is the flesh. Yeah. Which corresponds to sin in, you know, the first master in Romans 6. So let's just clear up this term, flesh. In apostolic language, flesh means physicality, your human body. There is no negative connotation that comes with flesh, except, you know, what we pick up from Paul here in Romans, you know, and other similar passages. But for example, there's several passages that speaks of Yeshua in the flesh. You know, it's like, it just means physically, his human body. Okay. So flesh is your human body. It is the flesh includes then your nephesh, your goof. So everything that is you, except for your eternal spirit, your neshama. That is spirit. And that's a mystery. We don't even know where we keep that, you know. it's not the same as your brain. It's not the same as your thinker. You know, that's the thinker is part of the flesh. But so in other words, flesh is the human body. That's what we need to establish. So what's he saying? He's saying that you were married, the first husband, you were married to is the flesh, your flesh. So going back, verse 4. Likewise, my Jewish brothers, you also have died according to the law regarding your marriage to the flesh, through being identified with the body of Christ. Now, this makes sense, because this is the same thing he said in Romans 6. We died with him, and we rise with him. All right, so we've died according to the law regarding the marriage to the flesh, so that you may belong and be married to another, to him who has been raised from the dead, in order that we may bear fruit, that is offspring, you know, a marriage, the children of a marriage, offspring in the form of righteous deeds for God. So your children in this marriage to Messiah will be righteousness. For while we were living in our marriage to the flesh, our sinful passions, aroused by the law of our marriage to the flesh, were at work in our members to bear fruit, that is, offspring, in the form of sinful acts for death. But now, we are released from the law. That which law? The Torah of Moses? No. We are released from the law that binds us to the flesh, having died to that legal marital constraint which held us captive to the flesh, so that we serve in the new way of the Spirit of God, which, and here I remind you what he means when he talks about serving in the new way of the Spirit and that sort of thing, as we learn in Galatians and so forth. He's referring to all the prophecies about the new covenant. Such as that the Torah will be, the Spirit is going to write the Torah on human hearts. So he says, so that now we serve in the new way of the Spirit of God, which writes the Torah on our hearts, and not in the old way of the writing. Now you'll see that I've crossed off the word written code. This is one of Aaron's suggestions from this morning. Because the Greek doesn't say written code. Written code is really strong. Written code. I mean, written code. A code is, you know, what is a code? A code is a law code. A written law code. If it said written code, it would be very hard to escape the implication that Paul is saying, we no longer follow the Torah. We just follow the Spirit, whatever it leads us to do. We no longer follow the rules of the written code of the Torah. Which is, you know, it's something he cannot be saying. But it's also something he did not say. Instead, he says, not in the way of the writing, which Aaron suggested. Writing, the Hebrew word for writing is ketubah. Ketubah is a marital document. It's a marriage contract between the husband and the wife, which is what the whole subject of this entire analogy has been about. So he says, not in the old way of the ketubah, which prevented us from escaping our marriage to the flesh. It was our obligation to the flesh. So the old way is not the Torah, but the old way is our obligation to serve the flesh. Whereas the new way is the Spirit, the transformation, the regeneration of the new covenant, the Spirit in our lives. Okay. Any questions on that? We'll if you turn over your sheet, you see we're going to parse it out just to make sure we got it nailed down.
I have a quick question. Yeah. In the NASB, it says, and not in the oldness of the letter?
Yes.
That's following the Greek.
Okay.
It's more literal. The Greek is paleotete grammatis, so it's sticking real close to the Greek.
Letter, right? Mm-hmm.
So that would still reference.
Yep. It could. Yeah. It could. It's writing.
Old
yep.
writing, old mm-hmm. letter. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because there's more than one letter. I mean, obviously.
Like old letter with the first letter.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The far side. What the ketubah, which prevented us from escaping our marriage to the flesh.
Yes. No, the law that binds you to the flesh. It's the law that binds you to the flesh.
Marriage covenant.
It's the marriage covenant.
Okay.
certificate of marriage, sort of.
Yeah, it is a certificate of marriage. Yeah, ketubah is a certificate of marriage. So the Torah, you can read the whole Torah, and nowhere in the Torah will it say, you are bound to serve the flesh and produce deeds of sin. You know, it's just, it's not the Torah. Instead, it's, Paul has played a, what do you call it when you, yeah, it's sort of a play on words.
Hyperbole?
It's not quite a hyperbole. It's, he's been messing with us. He's been, he started us thinking he was talking about one thing, and halfway through, he revealed he was talking about something else. He was baiting us. A bait and switch. The very idiom I was searching for. Yes, he was baiting us. Gotcha. All right, so let's see. Let's parse this out. Let's see on the back of your sheet. Make sure we understand the analogy. The woman then would be a Jewish person. Her first husband is the flesh. Her first marriage would be the old covenant. Now, let me explain this concept. That doesn't mean the Torah itself, but rather it means the attempt to keep the Torah in the flesh. That's how Paul speaks of the old covenant. And sin begets death. The second husband is the Messiah. And the second marriage then, the terms of the second marriage, is the new covenant, bearing the fruit of righteousness for God. Her children are our righteousness. Okay? Is that everybody following me?
Go over that old covenant again, please.
Yeah, okay. So the old covenant... This is referencing a whole nother set of ideas, but the Old Covenant refers to the attempt to live out righteousness in the flesh, which Paul is about to get into. He's about to explain it. The New Covenant, by contrast, entails God reprogramming the human being by changing his inner nature and actually writing his Torah upon the human heart, giving us a new heart, pouring pure water upon us, placing his spirit in us that we can walk in his ways. Make sense? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's just another way of saying it. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. If that's helpful.
I don't know. Old covenant, and I'm just like, don't want
to. I know. The language is so theologically loaded for us. That's why I even hesitated to use it. But the apostles use it. The book of Hebrews uses it. Paul uses it in Corinthians. He speaks of the old covenant versus the new covenant. And the old covenant being the way that we attempt to serve God and we fail. You know, Israel fails under the old covenant which you broke. The new covenant will not be like that. You know, instead I will write my Torah on their hearts. I'll forgive their sins. It's a totally different deal. And the whole concept, the excitement of the New Testament, is that we can begin to experience this right now. We can enter into this forgiveness of sins and this transformed, regenerated, new nature type of stuff. This is available for us to lay hold of now. That's why I used it anyway. But all right. Yeah, so the problem is then you think old, you know, because we're programmed, we are brainwashed. We are brainwashed to believe that the old covenant is the Torah and the old, rest of the Old Testament, and the new covenant is the New Testament. That's not it at all. Both the new covenant is in the Old Testament, right? Okay. Anyway, Paul knows he's been baiting us and using this intentionally ambiguous language because, and here's how I know that he knows. Because the next thing he says is a don't get me wrong statement. He throws out a false premise. What then shall we say? That the law is sin? By no means. So he knew what you were thinking. He knew we were getting confused. He knew that we thought he was talking about the Torah when he was talking about something else entirely. And this might go into the category of read that last bit back, and then he has to like correct himself when he hears it read back, because he hears how it sounds. But anyway, he's reached this point. He says, okay, don't for a second think that I'm saying the Torah is sin. You know, sin, the first husband, the flesh, the first husband. I'm not saying that's the Torah. So he says, what then shall we say? That the law is sin? By no means. Yet, if it had not been for the law, I'm fairly certain that, you know, this is a very famous passage that Paul's talking about himself. You know, Paul's talking about his internal struggles and failings and that sort of thing. And I don't want to diminish that. I'm sure that's also true. But I'm fairly certain that he's personifying Adam, the first man, the first human being. So listen to how this goes down. And actually, Maria pointed this out last week after class. She was reading ahead and cheating and reading ahead in Romans. And made that suggestion. It says, yet if it had not been for the law, I, and now Paul speaking as Adam, would not have known sin in the Garden of Eden, my suggestion. For I would not have known what it is to covet if the law had not said, you shall not covet. But sin, seizing an opportunity through the commandment, produced in me all kinds of covetousness. For apart from the law, and I'm suggesting apart from the definitions of righteousness created by the Torah, sin lies dead. I, Adam, was once alive apart from the law. And the law that Adam would be talking about, of course, is a very simple law. It's a very simple Torah. Rather than 613 commandments, there's only one. The one, two? Be fruitful?
No, I thought you were going to talk about don't eat from a tree of knowledge and don't eat from the tree of eternity.
Oh, no. No, just one. One, don't eat from the tree of knowledge. He never said don't eat from the tree of eternity. You could eat it from that anytime you wanted. Help yourself. You know, have two. one commandment. He had one commandment. Don't eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. This is the one commandment that he had. So he says, I was once alive apart from this law, from this one commandment. But when the commandment forbidding sin came alive in me and I died because I sinned. The very commandment that promised life proved to be death for me. This is the forbidden fruit phenomenon. You know? If you prohibit something, then it's the most desirable thing in the world. The one thing you're told you cannot have is the one thing you must have. This is why it's so hard to get control of yourself in terms of like, you know, when you're trying to break a habit or something, or, you know, addictive behavior and so forth, you know. The very commandment that promised life proved to be death to me. For sin, seizing an opportunity through the commandment, deceived me. And through it, through the law, through this commandment, sin used the law and killed me. So you see, this is the relationship. And this is why Paul wanted to use that ambiguity about the law. It's not that the law is sin. It's that sin uses the law. The law, represented as the law that binds you to the flesh, sin used that. Sin uses the Torah. Sin uses the Torah to, you know, the Torah of Hashem that says, thou shalt not. Sin uses every thou shalt not in order to drag us into sin and condemnation. That's That's his point. This is what happened to Adam anyway. So, again, don't get me wrong, Paul says. So, the law, the Torah, is holy. The commandment is holy and righteous and good. So, did that which is good then bring death to me?